A playlist original.
Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we review the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're watching The Suspect on AMC+, Lopez vs. Lopez on NBC, Blockbuster on Netflix, and Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities on Netflix.
So stay tuned to the end to find out what's in BJ's Cabinet of Curiosity.
I think I have some interesting stories.
Well, first, let's start with a thriller in The Suspect on AMC+.
Sure. The Suspect is a British police procedural, 5 episodes based on Michael Robotham's 2004 novel, The Suspect. In this story, a woman is found in a shallow grave in a cemetery. The postmortem reveals that she has been stabbed 21 times, self-inflicted. And, asked by the police for his advice on the crime, is Joe O'Loughlin, a clinical psychologist played by Aidan Tuner, who reveals he might know a little bit more about this crime. Joining him is D.I. Ruiz, played by Sean Parks, D.S. Davey, played by Anjali Mohindra, and Bobby Moran, played by Bobby Schofield. So, Me Too, what were your first impressions of this thriller?
Y'all, first thing, I had a lot of trouble finding this show on the AMC Plus app. If you want to watch The Suspect, make sure to not watch the true crime series. It is an entirely different show. Learn from my mistakes. How I felt about the right show once I watched The Right Suspect that we were referring to. I thought it was so good, and specifically because of the name. There are so many good suspects here. We have Joe himself, who is so sketchy, so deliciously trifling that you're like, he had to have done it. But then we have a patient who's obsessed with the number 21. And then the 21 stab wounds. Are we connecting dots here? And then there's his other doctor friend, Jack, who is also maybe not letting on how much he knows about this case. Or the patient obsessed with the number 21. There's a lot of suspicious people everywhere. Even Joe's wife.
Yeah, she also has a motive. And I think that's what really sucks you in, is that all of the characters you've mentioned have a natural and believable motive to be the murderer. And all of these connections just make you wonder, who could it be? Because it could be all of them, or none of them, maybe.
Yes, I think that the patient is a red herring. I think that the doctor friend of his is maybe someone who knows more than he's letting on, but maybe isn't the one that done it. Mm-hmm. And it might be another person we have yet to meet. This is from years of beach reads of thrillers that I'm pulling from. So
okay.
I'm not quite a subject matter expert, but I've been around a Hudson books, and I tend to pace well in the thriller world.
That's fair.
But speaking of pacing, this show was paced fantastically.
I really like the pacing. It is a longer show, but I think it worked well because we learn more and more about Joe throughout the episode and what he may know about the murder victim, Catherine McCain. And I think the way they drip feed us more details and the way the detectives are also picking up on them keeps you engaged with the story.
Drip feeding is so specific and so accurate. They did not let this show drag. They really didn't. You are like, ugh, it's an hour as you watch, or maybe you're not me. But then as you get into it, there isn't a moment where you're checking the time. Because maybe at the intervals where you might, they're like, oh, you might want to look in Joe's desk. Oh, you might want to look in Joe's phone. Or the detectives find something. At some points, they're a little bit suspicious of each other. It's good.
Ooh, suspicious of each other. Do you think D.S. Davey could be a suspect? She's new to murders, and that keeps coming up. Or D.I. Ruiz, because all he does is murders, and he's tired of murders.
I was very suspicious of the gentleman who had been around the block for a while. I don't know why, but something about it, something about how much he didn't want to lean into Joe and how suspicious Joe was being, I was like, I wonder what they have on each other.
What about Joe's coworker? He works at a private practice, and there's another psychologist who he's close with.
Very suspicious.
What about Joe's child daughter?
Not suspicious. Not a red herring, not a suspect.
And that's how they trick you.
That's how they got us on Mare. So, BJ, this is a classic thriller. They're not necessarily introducing new things, meaning it is a very genre show, but they've done it well. So do you want to watch more episodes of The Suspect on AMC Plus? Are you invested in the mystery?
I am. I would watch again, seriously. It helps that it's only 5 episodes, so like maybe a movie type of situation going on. And like you said, I'm invested. The fact that I am invested from this pilot throughout it is a sign to me that I want to finish this story. How do you feel?
I completely agree. If you're someone who loves thrillers, like I love thrillers, this one is for you. I have a long flight coming up. I plan to maybe just download this and knock it out on the plane.
So how about we go from thriller to your favorite genre, sitcom?
You're talking about Lopez versus Lopez on NBC. Adapted from TikTok, George and Mayan Lopez are in real life and play on the show, father and daughter working on healing a decade of silence following his infidelity and split from Maya's mom through social media videos. Helping them through their mess is George's ex and Mayan's mom, Rosie, played by Selenis Levia, Mayan's partner, Quentin, played by Matt Shively, and Mayan's son, Chance, played by Bryce Gonzalez. So, Beej, this show centers on family dynamics that are based on the very public family dynamics of George and Mayan Lopez. So chemistry is important. Did you buy it in this family show?
Some of it works. Some of it, I think, needs a little more time. I would say that George and Rosie are standouts. Their chemistry works really well. I buy them as a couple that has gone through struggles, has broken up, and also both really love their daughter.
I agree. Rosie was, by herself, an incredible standout in this pilot episode. So funny, kept the show going. When she came back on screen, you knew the scene was about to be good. I would say that George and Mayan might need to work on their chemistry a bit. I think Mayan is new to TV. Please correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, at askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. I believe she's been more behind the scenes, and this is more in front of the scenes because of the success of her TikTok videos with her dad that she filmed in the pandemic. And so I think that needs some time to develop as she finds her footing. And I would say the same about the humor of the show. It's a little bit uneven for me. They aren't doing a good enough job, I would argue, of striking the balance of the sharpness and the darkness of the show, like they're doing on Reboot on Hulu, for example, versus the silliness and the hijinks of a sitcom, like on George Lopez's own sitcom, The George Lopez Show.
Right. I think maybe that's part of the issue, is I was expecting kind of a updated version of The George Lopez Show, because George Lopez has a naturalness to his comedy delivery, which is going on here, but the jokes themselves aren't always landing. And that also made the laugh track stand out a lot more, because I was not laughing along with these voices in the background.
Yes, not a constant laughter. Maybe a chuckle here and there, but not a constant uproarious laugh, no.
But I think there's a lot of potential there. I think it's interesting how they're incorporating not only the TikTok backstory for the real George and Mayan, but also TikTok videos into the plot of the show.
I would also say where the show shines is in the supporting characters. We had a wonderful visit from Caroline Rea in this first episode as a patient who didn't want to pay nobody for her vet support from Mayan. And we got to see Lacey Mosley as Mayan's coworker. And it's always wonderful to see her on screen because she's just so funny and she just pops in whatever you put her in.
Yes, Brookie was also a standout friend, and I think she'll bring some good jokes and humor.
Yes, so funny. Those scenes were very funny. Rosie and George's scenes were very funny. And then I liked Mayan and her son. Chance was adorable. I just think overall they need a little bit of work to develop this one. But this is the first episode. They could find their footing.
Will you keep watching to find out if Lopez versus Lopez finds their footing?
I would say for this one, if you are not into sitcoms, I would not recommend this one for you, because I don't think this is the one that would bring you to the genre of comedy. If you are into sitcoms, I would give this a couple more episodes. That's what I'll do. I think I'll give it a couple more to see if they find their footing. But if they don't, I think I'm out.
Okay. It seems like you're giving me permission to pass on this one. So I'm going to say I would not watch again. However, there's an asterisk, a little fine print there. If Me Too says, check it out again, I will.
Speaking of checking things out, why don't you let us know what happened in Blockbuster on Netflix?
Sure thing. At the last remaining Blockbuster, a hardworking manager named Timmy Yoon, played by Randall Park, fights to keep his video store open and staff happy amid competition and complicated feelings for his coworker, Eliza Walker, played by Melissa Fumero. So, Me Too, how do you feel about setting a workplace comedy at the last Blockbuster?
I think there is huge potential there for humor, the discomfort of being the last of something, and that this show is basically exaggerating. Because, y'all, I Googled it, and the last Blockbuster is in Oregon, and it is, in fact, thriving. So this is, I guess, loosely based on what it feels like to be the last Blockbuster. Given all of the great potential, a strong cast, a strong storyline, and an audience on Netflix that knows what we did to Blockbuster, I would say that the show could be sharper. So one show that you brought up, BJ, in comparison is Superstore. And I think what Superstore does really well is balancing like looming economic crisis, job insecurity, union labor issues with sitcom hijinks and very funny workplace characters in a way where you don't feel like you're being lectured, or in a way where you feel like you're laughing with people and completely ignoring their problems. It just was balanced really well. And I think that this show would benefit from modeling a little bit more after that.
Right. He really enjoyed Superstore's ability to deliver real world messages. For example, when they talked a lot about unions, using humor. And I feel like in the pilot episode of Blockbuster, they talk about the struggles of being a small business owner, and then the jokes are a completely separate topic.
Yes. At one point, I think it was supposed to be a joke, but it felt more serious. Eliza talks about Netflix and streamers being a threat to Blockbuster, but Blockbuster being named after movies that basically eliminated indies. And I just felt like something about that could have been restructured so you're laughing with them and not going, oh yeah, you're right, all of this sucks. And then separately being like, LOL, they set off fireworks and those fireworks went wrong.
That is true. They should merge that together. I will say the comedy, even though it didn't cover those serious issues, did have some highlights. Tyler Alvarez as Carlos and Madeline Arthur as Hannah. They're two of the younger employees. They have really good chemistry and some interesting backstories that they're hinting at. And going back to Superstore, they reminded me a lot of Mateo and Cheyenne.
I loved them. I think the supporting cast on this show is so funny. We have J.B. Smoove as well as Percy Scott, Tim's best friend and the landlord of the strip mall. There is such a funny cast around, and I look forward to them being incorporated more. I know this is a half-hour pilot, so there's only so much character development you can do. But especially Carlos and Hannah, I would say, which is saying something about their talent, because J.B. Smoove is an established, very funny guy. But Carlos and Hannah were such standouts. I cracked up when they were on screen.
How do you feel about Timmy and Eliza's chemistry?
I think it is intentionally awkward, and I wonder if it'll heat up as maybe some obstacles get out of the way for their relationship. But right now, it just feels awkward. The other random part of the show was that Timmy recommended to, I think it was Carl Tart was guest starring. He recommended to him Under the Tuscan Sun. And I recently got off a long flight and I watched Under the Tuscan Sun. I think this was like a week ago. Fantastic film. If you take anything else from this review, go watch Under the Tuscan Sun.
So you're saying Blockbuster on Netflix might actually recommend good movies for us to watch?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Is that movie on Netflix?
I have no idea. I imagine it should be if they're talking about it, but I do know it's in the Delta In-Flight Entertainment, which is how I watched it.
Okay. Last question. Would you recommend it to someone who recently went through a breakup?
100%. It's a perfect film about finding independence, finding yourself, your interests. I mean, maybe we just pivot to being an Under the Tuscan Sun podcast. I'm not opposed. Let us know at askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. In the interim, what I can say about Blockbuster on Netflix is I would watch again casually. I think the comedy is a little uneven, but the supporting characters are really strong. And I think if you're looking for just a casual workplace comedy, this is a good one to watch as you're, I would say, actually while folding laundry, doing errands, things like that.
I think that's a good rating. I'm probably a little more lukewarm. I would watch while doing laundry or maybe cooking. I think it has a lot of potential. I would say maybe watch Superstore first if you haven't seen that. But I can see how this cast can grow together. And maybe now that we've introduced the conflict of them being the last Blockbuster and having to survive, we can get on to some more interesting situations.
Cool. Well, let's take things from the spooky world of the last business in a franchise to actual spooky, ooky, ooky worlds with Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities on Netflix. This horror anthology from Guillermo del Toro and featuring the prolific director with the very cute Twilight Zone style intro covers gothic style, horrific, and sophisticated stories. In this first episode, Nick, played by Tim Blake Nelson, is a right-wing xenophobe who buys a storage room lot and, despite the pleas of immigrant Amelia, played by Elpidia Carrillo, auctions its items belonging to her and her family right out from under her. Demons and danger ensue as he finds a seance table and rare books.
Ooh, spooky. Did you know this was based on a short story written by Guillermo del Toro?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. He's not writing all of the stories for the show, but this first one is his.
Okay, so one thing I will give you, Guillermo, is in this first episode, Guillermo, as if we're friends, in this first episode, there is such good tension. I think for my fellow babies, y'all are concerned, I was concerned, we're nervous about this being too scary. And in this case, tension builds, fear builds, but there isn't like blood, jump scares, things like that. You're just tense because you know something's about to go down.
Yes, they do a lot of good work with light or lack of light as well. And one of the mechanisms in this old warehouse is that all the lights are on a timer. So that builds more of this fear and tension of how long will the characters have light to see where they're going.
So creepy, because in the back of your mind, it's like a deadly version of Great British Baking Show where we're like, you have 30 minutes, get the pastry in the oven, do it. It won't have time to cool. Then your buttercream will melt right off of it. You're scared.
A horror version of Great British Bake Off.
That show is already horror. You get so tense and nervous for those people. And I felt similarly in the Cabinet of Curiosities, even though Nick is someone who I imagine is characterized as probably hating me, I was stressed for him.
He would not like you if you ever met. If he just knew you existed, he wouldn't like you.
He'd be like, they let another one in.
And I think makes his character so funny is he is such an extreme, hateful, white supremacist, xenophobic, add anything else type of person. And bad things do happen to him, but you kind of don't get much else than that. Like, I wish someone learned something, like a life lesson, or maybe that something really good happened to someone else in the episode.
Yes, there was very heavy-handed social commentary. He tells Amelia to go back to her country. He tells her to speak his language, even though she was speaking English. He has a very strange conversation and deep conversation about military service, treatment of veterans, treatment of white people, black people, brown people in the army, or in the military. There is so much social commentary about his economic position, about his status as someone who has hearing loss.
Oh, yeah. His marital status.
Debt. All these things are coming up. And I thought, like you, if they're being this heavy-handed in social commentary, then as corny as it may be, but I trust that Guillermo del Toro wouldn't make it corny, there has to be a resolution. There has to be like, and that's why immigrants are dope. Or, and that's why, you know, this about this. That's what I was thinking would happen. And instead, it didn't feel like anyone learned anything, to your point. Including the viewer. We just saw some bad things happen to him, which I don't think is a spoiler for anyone. But there wasn't, let's say, a point of clarity where he's like, man, I should have been nicer to that black man earlier today. You know, like, there isn't a moment for that.
That's a good point. I think I would have been satisfied if he just questioned his actions for a moment.
Yes, and he never does.
Until the end.
Maybe that's realistic, actually, now that we're talking about it out loud.
It is. But do we watch these curiosities for realism?
I would say no, right? Like, you want the guy to not only deal with the bad thing, but also be like, I'm sorry to all Latin American immigrants, like, on his way out, you know?
And to be maybe a little more repulsed by Nazis?
One thing I will say, speaking of things that are repulsive, are the effects. In a good way. Very good effects. Very visceral. Very gross.
Yes. As me to introduce the show as not being too scary or too creepy, it is gross and like maybe disgusting, but not too off-putting. It's just like, oh.
Yes. It is a Guillermo del Toro joint. So you're going to have something slimy, something creepy walking about. And they do that well.
Out of a budget.
They have good budget. So BJ, do you want to watch more episodes of this well-budgeted show on Netflix?
I'm going to say I might watch again while folding laundry. There are 8 episodes, all different stories. So I'll give it one more shot. How do you feel?
I will say that despite being part of the baby community with our listeners who are scared of horrors.
Boss babies, actually.
Boss babies, the boss baby community. Shout out JP Karliak. I would say that the show was paced really well and there was really good tension. And with the scary parts, I could just cover my eyes when things got a little bit gross.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll do and what I would recommend to fellow people who want to watch an interesting story but get scared is I'm going to read the plots of the anthology stories. And then find which ones I want to watch, which ones seem interesting.
Okay. Pick and choose your adventures.
Yes. I have to have some control because it's scary, ultimately.
That's fair. So do you want to hear a little bit more about my cabinet of curiosities?
Yes. It kind of sounds like a Harry Potter book. BJ and his cabinet of curiosities.
Yeah, that does sound like an object in the wizarding world.
Yeah.
Well, mine is locked, so... can't reveal anything today.
I don't think anyone tuning in would expect anything different from you. So why don't you just let us know where we can find more episodes of the Pilot Podcast, which are available to anyone, not at all emotionally unavailable, just accessible online podcast episodes.
I don't like how you said that. But I do like our listeners, and you can always find more episodes of the Pilot Podcast at thepilotpodcast.com. And be sure to follow us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. We never lock any of our episodes behind a paywall, so go ahead and listen.
You can also follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ThePilotPod. And you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, whatever is in your cabinet of curiosities, to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.